Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who has a vast collection of vintage DC and Marvel comic books, and ironically lives in Minnesota, where his favorite NBA team, the LA Lakers, originated, Dave Denniston.
Hello, hello, my friends. This is Dave Denniston, and welcome back to another episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, a podcast dedicated to helping doctors like you slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle. And also our second mission to help to create 100 new physician multimillionaires. And so, my friends, those are our missions. That is the reason why I do this podcast, as a way to give back to the physician community for all that they do for me and my family. And I mentioned earlier this year, one of my goals was to try and do more book reviews this year. I have been reading this book, Dollars and Cents. That's not C-E-N-T-S. That's S-E-N-S-E, sense. How we misthink money and how to spend smarter. So I want to walk you through some of my favorite parts of this book. But before I do that, I want to give a shout out to some of the past podcasts that we've had that I've talked over some books. So if you haven't checked out some of these podcasts, make sure to check out the podcast where I talked about The Millionaire Mind. Actually, it was three different podcasts that I thought was so important to establishing the millionaire mindset. So make sure to check out those podcasts. I reviewed Tools of the Titans by Tim Ferriss last year. Make sure to check out that podcast as well. I reviewed over Dan Pilla's book about tax audits and how to handle them. So make sure to check out that book as well. And today we're talking over Dollars and Cents. It is by Dan Ariely and Jeff Chrysler. Dan's last name is spelled E-A-R-I-E-L-Y, like Ariel, but with a Y. And Jeff's last name, if you want to check it out, starts with a K, K-R-E-I-S-L-E-R. I'm calling it Chrysler. I don't know how he pronounces it, but that's how I am going to pronounce it. And so this book, the reason I like it is it gets into the mental side of finance. In this podcast this year, we've talked a lot about taxes and tax strategies and how taxes changed. We've talked about some of the financial experiments that I do, which there's an update coming out, I believe, next week for the quarter one financial experiments, which there's some really good stuff, exciting things going on there that I'm really excited to share with you. This book is what I would call talking about behavioral finance. And it does it in a manner that is relatively easy to read. This, my friends, can be a very dry subject. And to a degree, they make it entertaining. I would recommend it as one of the better books to read if you want to get mindset. It tackles it differently than The Millionaire Mind by Thomas Stanley. That book goes more by surveys and data and numbers in terms of how people are making decisions. This book is much more about the thoughts and behaviors that people have in terms of mental behaviors, not necessarily the purchase habits, but more the negative habits that we can have. So they give this example towards the beginning of the book of a casino, and there's this guy named George. And what they say in the book here is casinos have perfected the art of separating us from our money. So it's a little unfair for us to start here. Nonetheless, George's experience gives us a quick glimpse into some of the psychological mistakes that we make, even in less malicious settings. They talked about mental accounting, which is this phenomenon where, in this case, George, he spends $200 just nonchalantly at the casino, yet he is more worried about his coffee in the morning. He doesn't mind buying a $5 Starbucks or $10 Starbucks, but as opposed to just getting drip coffee, where as opposed to the $200 his entertainment fund, if you will. So this is two different ways to think about spending and a common heuristic that people get into. The other phenomenon they talk about this book quite a bit is the price of free. They talk about how George was excited to get free parking and free drinks. And sure, he wasn't paying for them directly, but these free things get George to the casino in a good mood and impair his judgment. So in fact, these quote-unquote free things extract a high cost. So we often say, right, the best things in life are free, but free can end up costing us money. The exception being this podcast, of course. Third principle that they talk about in the book is the pain of paying. And so they talk about ways that various vendors get around that. In the case of casinos, they use chips, right? Casino chips, colorful casino chips. And so it feels like you're playing a game that you're not actually parting with your dollars. You become less conscious of your choices and less considerate of the implications. Spending with credit cards gets to be the same thing, right? They talk about relativity, that a $5 tip on a free drink and a $3.50 ATM fee don't seem consequential relative to the stacks of tips surrounding him at the blackjack table or the $200 he was simultaneously taking out of the ATM. Those were relatively small amounts of money. And because he is thinking about them in relative terms, it's easier for him to go ahead and spend, right? So that $4 coffee compared to $0 coffee at his hotel room, it didn't feel like much. But we all know that those things add up. But we brush those things aside is the problem. Expectations. It talks about how someone can fancy themselves being more than who they are. They talk about him feeling like he's James Bond 007, the suave Victor at the casino table. And then above all else is self-control. As we know, gambling, as I cite here, is a serious issue. It's an addiction for folks. However, for our purposes, we can simply say that George, in this case, was influenced by stress and surroundings, the friendly staff, the easy opportunities. He was having a hard time resisting the temptations of gambling for the distant benefits of having $200 more when he retires. So those, my friends, are the main issues, the main crux of what they talk about here. And I want to dive a little bit deeper into a few of these concepts in terms of how we think about money and how they can affect us. One of my favorite things that they talk about here are a few of the historical ways in which humans have valued things incorrectly. So let's think about some of these stories. The Native Americans, they sold Manhattan for some beads and guilders. How could they have known how to value something, in this case, property, that they had never heard of, for which they had no context? They talk about how the cost to rent an apartment in some major cities can climb to more than $4,000 a month, and we don't seem to blink. And yet the price of gas can rise 15 cents a gallon, and it can swing a national election. They talk about how startup tech companies with no revenue are regularly valued to be worth hundreds of millions, even billions of dollars. And then we act surprised when these companies with no revenue don't live up to expectations. They talk about how some people go on a $10,000 vacation, but then they spend 20 minutes each day looking for free parking. I know some of us resemble that remark. They talk about how we comparison shop for smartphones. We think we have an idea of what we're doing, and at the end, we feel we have made the right choice. $1,000 iPhone, anyone? They talked about that King Richard III was willing to sell his kingdom, his whole entire kingdom for a horse. His kingdom for a horse. And their point here is that we are not perfectly rational creatures. We are predictably irrational. And we have to get in touch with value. We have to get in touch with the implications of the decisions that we make. Because some of these things, you know, are small little deals that add up over time. Other things are making a big deal. You know, you look at how people take on car payments, for example, versus just buying a vehicle in cash. If you've been listening to this podcast, you know how emphatic I believe that paying in cash for whatever you have is important. Yet people look at a monthly payment of saying $249 a month, $500 a month. Oh, I can afford that. When in fact they could be done with that in a year. Now, one of the examples they give is there's another book called Mindless Eating, which showed this concept of relativity and how it can affect our waistlines. So they talk about how if you're given a choice between three burgers on a menu, let's say one at 8 ounces, 10 ounces, and 12, we're most likely to pick the middle option. But if instead the options are 10, 12, and 14, we again choose the middle one, even though we would normally just be satisfied with a 10-ounce burger. And this is similar concepts, right, to pricing strategies and how companies get us to pay more. So it's really about that mechanism of how do we think about money, and are we thinking about the decisions that we make on a daily basis? You know, do we really need to supersize our fries, right? Well, let's take a moment for a quick commercial break. Well, my friends, if you are sitting here confused by all these tax changes, wondering how the heck does this impact me? I mentioned in January, the beginning of this year, that I am going to make available to you my calculator showing all the different scenarios laid out on how this whole thing works. So for this month and the next one, if you text all one word, less taxes, LESSTAXES, all one word, less taxes, to 44222, you can grab that calculator right now. Go ahead and text less taxes, all one word, LESSTAXES, to 44222. And if you're interested in wanting to get the tax reduction prescription, the newest version of it, definitely text there as well, because that will give you early access to the next version of the tax reduction prescription. Again, text less taxes, all one word, LESSTAXES, to 44222. And now, back to the show. Another thing that I thought was poignant within the book was how in this section about avoiding pain, that so many of us tend to avoid pain with our money. They say here, for example, that when you pay during something, that we tend to feel pain as opposed to paying for something ahead of time tends to make things a more pleasurable experience. So they give an example of a honeymoon, that when the author and his wife went on their honeymoon, they prepaid everything ahead of time. They went to an all-inclusive resort. So it was painful the time that they paid the money, but by the time they got there, it allowed them to be fully present and enjoy the trip rather than having to worry about the finances. And so that concept of paying ahead, like let's look at gift cards, right? You might get a $25 gift card from someone, but maybe you only use $15 or $20 on it. Yet you don't feel guilty about that because someone else paid for it ahead of time. They give an example here of what if a restaurant owner found out that on average, people take 25 bites and pay $25 for a meal? Well, we know that comes out to a dollar a bite, right? And so one day the owner decides to have a 50% off promotion and charge 50 cents a bite. He then goes a step further and says, we will only charge for the bites you take. The bites you don't take, you don't have to pay those. And so what happens is a waiter has to stand next to us and make a little mark on a notepad every time we take a bite. And when we're finished, the waiter rings up our check, charging us 50 cents a bite only for the bites that we took. Now, they give an example that this would be an economical meal, right? It would be incredibly efficient. But how much fun and enjoyment would that be? Having a waiter looking over your shoulder, whether or not you took a bite, making a mark every time that you do, right? That doesn't sound fun at all. That sounds annoying. And they talk about how the author brought a pizza into his class and charged students 25 cents a bite. And so the students, to avoid the pain of paying, they thought they found a workaround by taking extra large bites. And of course, then their faces got messed up. They got clogged throats. And this is why this idea of paying as you go, or even paying afterwards, can feel an awful lot of pain and make things feel worse behavior-wise, which is something interesting I want to point out about medicine for us to consider. How many times do us as physicians, those of us in the audience that are physicians, how often do we collect money ahead of time? Almost never, right? Most of the time, patients have to pay the bill way afterwards, which then they're upset about it, really upset about it. I thought another interesting example in the book, they talked about how the longer someone takes to do something, the more we tend to value it, especially if we can see the work being done, when in fact we get upset if someone takes a short amount of time period but charges a similar amount of money. So they give an example of a locksmith who is able just in 5 minutes to pop open a door for someone versus someone having to take an hour to do so. And people tended to not grumble and be unhappy about writing the check to the guy who took a short amount of time, but yet had more skill. So I think we have to think about those things in terms of whether we work with a locksmith or a CPA or a lawyer or someone like that. Obviously, there's dollar amounts that don't make sense to pay someone. Although if someone can charge a similar rate and get it done faster, maybe we should value that expertise if it's done with perhaps even better quality. So I love that idea in this book, and one that is definitely worth thinking about. Another concept that I thought was fascinating that I've talked about before in the past is this concept of anchoring. Anchoring is this idea of cementing the idea of how we should feel about something or how we should pay for something. So, for example, how much should we pay to have someone walk our dog or pay for a can of soda? And they give an experiment here to show anchoring that was done by two gentlemen in a 1974 experiment regarding the United Nations. And so what they did, they gathered a group of college students together and they had them spin a wheel that, because it was rigged, land on either two numbers, either 10 or 65. And then they asked the students two questions. Is the percentage of African nations in the UN higher or lower than 10 or 65? Whichever the number the wheel has landed on, right? So they don't ask them 10 or 65. Do you think that it's higher than 10% or do they think it's lower than 65? And so for those students whose first question was whether the African nation was higher or lower than 10%, the average answer to the second question of what percentage of African nations were in the UN, the average answer was 25%. For those who were exposed to the 65 number when they had spun a wheel, in terms of the 10 or 65, they tend to answer higher. So the first group, which the anchor was 10, answered 25. The second group, which the anchor was 65, answered 45. So in other words, the number from this wheel, this random wheel for two questions, got them thinking about either 10 or 65 in relation to the percentage of African nations in the UN. And once they've been exposed to either number, that influenced their own supposedly unrelated evaluation in the second question. So my friends, this is anchoring at work. And this is the kind of tactics that we have to be careful about from salespeople, because they can anchor costs. They could anchor the relativity of the cost of coaching, for example. They can anchor the cost of different houses, or anything you can think of tends to have anchors. So just be careful and look at the numbers. To give you another example, there was a group of realtors in another study that they brought together that were in Tucson. So these are people that knew the market. They were informed. They were experienced. And they were asked to come up with a value of an estimation of the house. And so they were shown various comparisons. And basically what ended up happening is that the ones that were shown certain numbers, of course, went lower. Those were shown other numbers went higher. So they were influenced by an anchor price. Even though we're looking over similar things, there was this anchoring statistic. So read about that in the book. It's really, really good stuff. Some of my favorite stuff to check out. And so there's lots of more things here in this book. I just wanted to give you a taste of the these concepts of behavioral finance that, to me, are so important in understanding and having power over money and your choices. And to be honest, these are things that I fall down on and I have been subject to and emotionally swayed to, as I'm sure probably you have in your life as well. And it's important to be aware of these concepts so that you don't get built and can really try and be aware of what your shortcomings are personally. And so, my friends, I highly recommend reading Dollars and Cents by Dan Ariely and Jeff Chrysler. Check the book out. Get it from your local library or buy it on Amazon. We'll make sure to have a link to it on the show notes. And of course, I'd always love to know from you, what are you checking out? What are books that have influenced you? What's maybe another book that I could review in the future? For the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, this is Dave Denniston. Remember, my friends, remember to slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle. Well, there was the show. Hope you loved it. And of course, we want to make sure to remember that right now is the time. If you are confused about this tax stuff, you want the latest copy of the tax reduction prescription and that calculator I was talking about in January. There's no better time to grab that than right now. Text less taxes, LESSTAXES, to 44222. Again, that's all one word, less taxes, LESSTAXES. Thank you again so much for listening. Blessings to you. Have a good one.